Hello. Hi, I'm Jillian York. Thank you. Thank you for being here, you know, at 10 o'clock at night. Awesome. So what I want to talk about tonight is the battle for free speech that's happening on the internet, but not the one that we've known about for 10 or 15 years, but specifically the one that's happening on corporate platforms, our corporately owned platforms. So I'm going to start this by telling a little story of something that some of you may have heard of. Does this campaign look familiar to anyone? Maybe? Yes? Okay, cool. So this was a breast cancer awareness campaign by Pink Ribbon Germany that did a nice little pun saying, check it before it's removed. And of course, they were talking about doing breast exams to make sure of not having cancer, but they were also talking about checking it before it's removed from Facebook. See, sexual health information in particular and women's health information, and as you'll see, lots of other things, are regularly censored from these platforms, from Facebook, from Twitter, from Google. And so this campaign, and I love them for this, Pink Ribbon Germany decided to play with that a little bit and to create a campaign that would intentionally get people talking. And it was very effective because as soon as people posted it to Facebook, they would have it taken down. And so you would post this picture, you'd select one of the pictures, you'd post it, and the company would just remove it. And of course, this got more and more press for Pink Ribbon Germany, which got more and more press for breast cancer awareness, which is a good thing. But I was one of the people who had this removed. So maybe I've done this before, I don't know. But what happened was this. I posted the image, that one on the far right. I liked that one. I posted that image to my Facebook profile, my personal one, which, by the way, is only for my friends. So I use the heavy privacy settings so that only my friends can see my Facebook wall. And so I posted this to my friends, and a couple of hours later, it was gone. And then I got this warning that told me that I was banned from Facebook for 24 hours. Specifically, in case you can't read that back there, this temporary block will last 24 hours and you won't be able to post on Facebook until it's finished. Please keep in mind that people who repeatedly post things that aren't allowed on Facebook may have their accounts permanently disabled. Okay, so 24 hours and I can't post to Facebook. Not a big deal, right? Right. However, it wasn't just that I couldn't post to Facebook. I also could not message my friends using that platform. I couldn't log into Spotify. I couldn't comment on a bunch of major newspapers that use the Facebook platform for comments. I could not use Tinder. I couldn't do online dating. So many things that I was completely banned from for 24 hours. But see, here's the thing. I know, it sounds tragic, really. But here's the thing. These bans aren't just for 24 hours. They go up to 30 days. And then you can be permanently banned. And why is that? Why does that matter? I know a lot of people are like, oh, I don't use Facebook. Facebook is stupid, whatever. And I agree with that, honestly. But that's not always the case. See, I actually administer two Facebook pages for my job. So if I had not happened to work for a free speech organization that happened to find this really, really funny, then I would have been completely fucked because I would not have been able to administer those pages that were part of my job requirement because I got banned for posting abreast. Now you can see how ridiculous this is, but I want to talk more broadly because it's not just about nudity and it's not just about Facebook. This is happening across all of these different platforms and across a number of different topic areas. And what's happening is that people are getting kicked off, they're getting censored, and the sort of window of speech is getting more and more narrow and more homogenous. So I've been looking at this topic for about 6 years, and a few years ago, a friend actually and I put together this idea for a project called Online Censorship. And the idea was that we wanted to, well, we were fed up because the companies were not being very transparent about what they were removing or what their policies were. I can explain that in more detail in a minute. But the companies were being very opaque, and so we decided that we would just circumvent the whole process and the whole call for transparency, and instead of getting the companies to tell us what they were taking down, we would get the users to tell us what they were having taken down. We started with 6 platforms. This is currently what the website looks like. We're expanding it and translating it into other languages. And we actually won a $250,000 award a couple years ago to be able to build this and build our team and put all of this together. And so What we've done is we've collected reports over the past 8 months from users who've experienced takedowns. And what we found is pretty incredible. Now, keep in mind the sample size is pretty small. But basically, the project is this. We seek to encourage social media companies to operate with greater transparency and accountability toward their users. And so we're collecting reports in an effort to shine a light on what's being censored. These are our results at a glance. So this was in 4 months, just 4 months from launching, November to April. And so in those 4 months, we managed to get 161 different reports from 26 countries in 11 languages. And most of those reports were about Facebook. So people were telling us constantly that Facebook was censoring their content. Nudity and false identity were the two, were the most frequent reasons given to users. And I want to talk about that too, because I think that with nudity, what Facebook says, and I didn't keep the screenshot in here, unfortunately, but it's really great. I wish I could memorize it. What they say in their rules is basically they twist themselves into a pretzel trying to tell you what's acceptable and what's not acceptable. So just for example, because it's 10 o'clock at night and this is really funny, you can show side boob, but not nipple. You can show butt, but not anything here, no matter, regardless of the gender. You can show nipples, but only if it's a man, not if it's a woman. And Facebook wants to clearly define what is and is not a man or a woman. And they do so repeatedly by misgendering people and taking down content from trans people all the time. So the nudity policy is inherently discriminatory. And then you have the identity issue. And so false identity, what they mean is this. Facebook requires you to use your real name on their platform. And what they've traditionally meant by that is your legal name. Although in the past couple of years, due to a lot of good protests, mostly in San Francisco and mostly by drag queens, they have kind of expanded that definition to be your authentic name. Now, what's your authentic name? Well, it's probably not a hacker name or a performer name or anything like that. It's probably only, you know, you might get lucky if you're a trans person and your name does not match the one on your ID. Facebook might not disable your account. That's basically what they're telling you. That's their policy shift. And so basically the nudity and the false and the real name or authenticity policy, those two policies disproportionately affect women, queer people, trans people, and anyone else outside of that space, outside of the sort of normal whatever space that Facebook is trying to create. So we've seen people in other countries have their content taken down because their names don't quite match what Facebook thinks a name should look like. People with mononyms and things like that. So those are really the discriminatory areas, I think. And then the policies still get sort of worse from there. We've seen that when it comes to appealing these decisions, there is no democracy at these companies, but that shouldn't surprise anyone. This is capitalism. And so what we have is the majority of users not being able to find a method to appeal to the company about their content takedown. So when I was banned, I had no path of recourse. Now, I was actually, I did not abuse any of my connections to these companies, but I was later able to talk to somebody on the policy team and ask them what had happened. And what they told me was this. I had apparently, I was not a first-time offender. As it turns out, a year and a half ago, I posted a different breast. Yeah, here's the funny thing though. See, the breast that I posted, it was a painting of the famous actress Bea Arthur, that's a whole other point. But it was a painting. And see, Facebook's rules say that paintings are okay. So when that one was taken down a year and a half ago, I appealed and I wrote, well, this actually is okay under your own rules. And they reinstated it, but it didn't matter because the way that their algorithms were based is that they'd already put that one strike against me. And so that this time I got banned for 24 hours and next time it'll probably be 7 or 30 days. And so what we're seeing then from the research correlates to that, that the majority of users don't appeal. 50% say they didn't know how. 41% say they didn't expect a response. And only in 4 cases of appeals out of those many, half of 160, so yeah, 80-ish, content was restored. And in 50, the user didn't get any response at all. Nothing positive or negative, no information whatsoever. And then flagging, which this really bothers me. So do people use social media? Am I getting some users out here? Facebook, Twitter, anything? Yes? Awesome. Okay. Okay, so you know what I'm talking about then when I say this. Have you ever seen something posted that was really, let's say, not something really horrible, but something you just really didn't like, and it was it ever tempting for you to flag that content as unacceptable? Because, I mean, I admit, sometimes it's really tempting for me too. So I'm not talking about, like, flagging Nazis. I'm not talking about flagging stuff like that. I mean people who flag people just because they don't like what that person has to say. And unfortunately, these companies are actually encouraging that sort of snitching culture. What they want is for you to report on your friends when you think your friends may have done something wrong. And so that's what happened in my case as well. Because when I posted that breast, as I mentioned at the beginning, I posted it only to my friends. So two possible things could have happened. One is my friends reported it on purpose because they know the work that I do, and that's very likely. I still haven't found the culprit, but it's very likely. The other possibility, though, is that one of my friends thought that nudity was unacceptable and decided to snitch on me for posting it. I think that this entire culture is wrong. I don't think it's just, you know, oh, we mistakenly censored this here and there. And I realize and recognize that these companies have real challenges when it comes to dealing with hate speech and terrorism and things like that, child pornography. But when it comes to nudity, nudity shouldn't be banned in the first place. People shouldn't have to be using the name that's on their identification. And we shouldn't have this culture that encourages people to snitch on their friends and their family. Just gonna skip forward a second. So there's another problem with the nudity policy, because it's not just discriminatory against women and trans people. It's also just really problematic in the first place. You'll notice here, now, this is, you can see the breasts, so this is me actually going to report that image. That's what's happening on this screen right here. And it asks me what's wrong with this post, and it says that it's annoying or distasteful. Okay, then the second one, it says it's pornography. And then under pornography, it says nudity, comma, sexual arousal, comma, or sexual acts. There you go. You've got Facebook telling you that pornography and nudity are the exact same thing. They're conflating the two things as if they were one. And they're basically imposing their, what I would have to say is probably white American 30-something male cultural idea on the rest of the world through this. I think that that's what a lot of their policies look like, because when you look at what you can say, violence is generally acceptable. The kind of hate speech that our politicians spout is acceptable. State-sponsored violence, totally fine on Facebook. But this? Can't have a breast. So the other stuff that we've seen too being removed, other content that is technically acceptable under the community standards, such as breastfeeding or art, gets removed all the time, even though there's specific carve-outs for that kind of content. Sexual health information. So last year, to rag on a different company for just a second, Twitter, there was a campaign by the, let me see if I can get the name of the organization right, the National Campaign for Teen and Unplanned Pregnancy in the United States. They have this really cool website called Bedsider, and it's meant to be like a hip way of imparting sexual health information to young people. It's a really good website, great resource, even for adults. And this website tried to do a campaign, like an advertising campaign on Twitter, and what they wanted to do was to encourage women to get their regular health checkups. The well woman checkup is what it's called in the US most of the time. And so in encouraging them to do so, they said something about you're sexy when you're healthy. That was the advertisement. You're sexy when you're healthy. Nothing wrong with that statement, except Twitter rejected the advertisement because it was too sexual for them. So again, you can have advertisements, and I'm sure you've seen these, in the US where you've got a woman in a bikini that's saying, like, here's your beach body, are you ready for the beach this summer? And that's not too sexy, but encouraging a woman to go to the doctor, way too sexy for Twitter. So just moving on to our data just a little bit more. Looking at what we saw from users, we asked them why they think that the companies are doing this. And I think that this is one of the biggest misconceptions that I face in dealing with talking to users regularly, is that users don't understand who's censoring their content. And I want to answer that question because it is a little bit more complicated than it looks. Although, most of our users in this case got it right. So there are a couple of different ways. The first one, and this doesn't really, well, it applies to Germany more and more, but hopefully not to anyone here. Governments do pressure or legally require companies to take down content. And that is happening in Germany, although in Germany it's mostly happening with hate speech and content that would be against the law already here. Still, regardless of that, I still see problems with it, because even if we want that speech to go down, the way that they're doing it means that all sorts of other speech will get caught up in that net as well. But then, so you've got the company thing, you've got country thing, you've got countries pressuring the companies or legally ordering them, requiring them to take content down. But then the other reason, and most of our users guess this right, is flagging. Most of what's happening is users snitching on other users. It's not a great conspiracy inside of the companies, as I often hear from American conservatives who think that liberals run Facebook. Oh yeah, no, not kidding. half of our reports these days. But yeah, so we get information like that. But in terms of the flagging, most people are starting to understand that this is happening because the companies want you to do this to each other. And why do they want us to snitch on each other? I mean, I think a lot of it has to do with sort of a failure of imagination, but B, also a failure of their systems, because their entire system is set up not only around these rules and banning drugs and banning nudity and banning hate speech. Some stuff we want banned, maybe, I don't know. Some stuff we definitely do not. But regardless of that, the entire system is set up in a way that they can't do it themselves. There's no technical way to determine what a beheading video is. There's no technical way to determine whether the use of whatever derogatory word toward a certain group of people, whether it's being used ironically or being used hatefully. And so when companies try to expand this, they fail. And so instead, they're requiring you. They're basically asking you to do free labor in looking at other people's content and deciding whether or not you think it's unacceptable. And so you're working for them in the process of doing this. And I can't accept that. So these are just conclusions, not of my talk, but of the report itself, because I wanted to interlace these things together. And I'll just go through them really quickly and explain them. So the first one, this should be pretty obvious, but the communities most impacted by censorship are often the most marginalized. And I think that this is really, really important, because right now the conversation in Germany does make me a little bit nervous. This conversation around wanting Facebook or Twitter to do more about some of the nasty speech that is going on these platforms. And I agree that the speech is horribly nasty, but what I don't believe is that companies can get this right. We know from the labor practices of these companies that they're outsourcing content moderation to places like the Philippines, where they're paying people without full wages, without good benefits, without any benefits in most cases, and that those people have split seconds to look at the content and determine whether or not it is or is not acceptable. So you've got that model currently in play. The alternative model to that, of course, is using some sort of algorithm to detect good speech and bad speech, and we know that that won't work. There are much smarter people than me who've argued that before, and I encourage you to look into theirs, because I am not technical enough to explain that one. But what it comes down to is there's no way right now to determine good or bad speech. And so we're stuck in this model where we're the labor for Facebook, and Facebook is at the same time outsourcing and paying low wages for other labor. And then we've got this second problem. Content is being taken down in error that should stay up or that fits under the community guidelines. So there's no quality control. The breast that I showed you, maybe that should have been taken down under the rules, even though I think that that rule is so wrong. But the other one that I posted several weeks ago absolutely should not have been taken down, because it says very specifically that nudity is okay in paintings. And so there's no quality control at the companies. They're just, you know, it's almost like Tinder. They're swiping right or swiping left so quickly that they, oops, I forgot that one. So the third point, users report appeals processes, like I said before, difficult or non-existent. So even when a user does have content taken down, they have no way to complain about it. There's no hotline to call. You can't call customer service. You just have to hope that the company sees when you click on the thing. And it doesn't work very well. And then, of course, users who violate certain standards report increasingly stringent bans. In some cases, these bans result in users being cut off from external platforms. So that was what happened in my case. The company is still not admitted publicly that that was what was supposed to happen. But I assure you that despite paying for Spotify, I couldn't access it. So I was cut off from things that I pay money for. I don't even know about that. And of course, you know, we've seen these bans becoming permanent in some cases. I will say that most of those cases have to do with terrorism. And so in many cases, we want people banned probably. But at the same time, sometimes the people who get banned for terrorism aren't terrorists. A lot of times we've seen, for example, one of my favorites is a journalist friend of mine. He lives in the UAE. And he had posted an image of Hassan Nasrallah from Hezbollah in Lebanon with the gay pride flag overlaid on his face. And this was just, you know, a subtle form of commentary. It was no major work of art, but it certainly wasn't in favor of terrorism, and Facebook took it down anyway because they didn't understand it. And then finally, policies such as Facebook and other companies' real name requirement, nudity policy, are perceived by the users we spoke with to be discriminatory. So those aren't my words. You're hearing from 160 or so users, particularly when they're enforced in private groups or friends-only posts. So it's one thing if you're posting publicly and the whole world can see it and somebody snitches on you. It's another thing if it's a group of 10 people and you have that group for the purpose of sharing certain types of photos, and then those photos get banned because you're all snitching on each other. It just shouldn't even be possible. So that's the conclusions from my report. I have no idea what time it is. Does somebody want to shout that to me so I can know how much longer I can talk? So much longer. Amazing. Wonderful. Okay. So those are the results from the report itself. I did speak really quickly, so I'm afraid that I won't be able to fill up the whole 20 more minutes, but I do have a few more things to say that I just want to get out there before I forget them. So I talked a little bit about sexual health information being censored, and I want to expand on that one just a little bit more because it's so much worse than I have already illustrated. And I want to give one really, really good example of this. So this one's sort of funny. Microsoft Bing, does anyone ever use Microsoft Bing? Okay, have you ever heard, this is where we get punchy because it's past 10:30. Have you ever heard that Microsoft Bing is the best porn search engine? It's the best search engine for porn. I heard it, I'm just saying. So here's a funny story about that. And this, trust me, this relates directly to my talk. So the person who told me that Bing was the best search engine for porn lives in Beirut, which is a lovely place that I like to visit all the time. And one night I got a message from that friend, and they were like, "You're not going to believe this. The censorship is back." And I'm like, "What are you talking about? The censorship is back." And they were like, "Remember when you wrote that paper?" Okay, so here goes. In 2009, I wrote a paper with a co-author where we elaborated on this issue of Microsoft censorship, because what happened was Microsoft Bing launched. It was 2009, 2010, I'm probably getting the year wrong, but it was six or so years ago. When Microsoft Bing launched, they launched a number of different other versions for different countries. So you had the China version of Microsoft Bing, the one for Thailand, the one for India, and some of these were censored and some of them were not. And the way in which they were censored was this. If you Googled a word, or Googled, sorry, if you Binged a word that came up against the censor, it would enforce safe search on your country. So your entire country, and you know, that what that would mean is, like, if you searched for sex and you were in India, it would be like, "Sorry, you don't get any answers to this. It just doesn't exist." It would tell you safe search has been enforced. It's legally required. Okay, well, I don't know much about India. I don't know much about Thailand. But what I did know was this. They had grouped all of the Arab countries together as one country for the purpose of Microsoft Bing. And then they had censored them heavily so that when you searched the word breast, what you got back was nothing. So we started testing it. So we would play and we'd go chicken breast and you'd get nothing. Breast cancer, nothing. In Arabic and in English on that version of it. And so we're like, they're censoring recipes and health information. Like, that's crazy. So at the time, I was nobody. I didn't know anybody at Microsoft, but I somehow managed to, like, work my way through some contacts and get a call with Microsoft's team. And I was like, yes, I got the Bing team on the phone. So I get into this, you know, meeting, and it's like with professors, and they're all very serious. And I'm sitting there like, all right, what are we gonna do about this? And so we told them how wrong it was and how ridiculous it was. And to my surprise, they rolled it back. They took away the censorship, and they enforced safe search on a handful of things, like really dirty words, but not sex or breast or things like that. So victory. For like 6 years, this was a victory. And then last year, like I said, the porn friend called me up. And they said that Microsoft Bing was censoring stuff again in Lebanon. And of course, I knew that they knew this because they were looking for porn. So I said, okay, well, maybe they're just censoring your weird taste in porn. Can you like look up some other things? So my friend Googles, you know, breast cancer. Again, censorship is back. So after 5 years, for some reason, somebody at Microsoft got a little itchy and a little nervous that suddenly they were gonna piss off the Saudis, and they locked it back down. So the moral of that story, there isn't one. I mean, it's just bullshit. Don't use Bing. I don't know. But the moral of that story, yeah, don't use Bing. Really, though, I think that it's sort of telling because it shows that these companies often have no idea about the context in which they're in. The reason that I find that particular example so funny, and I didn't say this before, and maybe it was obvious to some of you, but if you know the Arab world at all, you know that there is no real censorship in Lebanon. And then, of course, on the far opposite end of the spectrum, Saudi Arabia is very, very censorious, blocks a lot of the internet, et cetera. And then there's a whole range of countries in between that censor to certain degrees and some not at all. And so Microsoft's, you know, head honchos, the white guys in California, were like, it's just Arabs. We'll just block it all, whatever. They won't know the difference. And that's what's happening all the time. When Facebook says you can't have nudity, they're like, oh, well, we know that Germans are okay with nudity, but we don't care about them. I actually heard this for real from someone at Facebook who said, well, you know, he's like, I'm sympathetic to you, Jillian, but see, we met with the Swedish government and the Emirati government on the same day. And see, the Swedes, they want the nudity and the Emiratis don't. And so we just have to go with no. There was no clear explanation as to why the Emiratis were more important than the Swedes, but I'm guessing we know why. Ultimately what it comes down to is that the people inside these companies have no idea what they're doing. That's what I've concluded after 6 years of researching what they've done and also of knowing them. And there are good people inside every company, of course. People make up companies, as America likes to forget. But what it comes down to is that there's no diversity within the structures of these companies. So if you look at Google and Facebook and Twitter, they're all 70% male. And they're all more than 70% white. And so the people who are making these decisions are mostly American, which means that they have certain values about nudity and violence that are probably the exact opposite of the values of most Germans. And then you have, so it's sort of a cultural imperialism in a way, that they're pushing it through these companies, they're pushing their values, they're pushing very American, very male values, in my opinion. They're pushing you to snitch on your friends. They're pushing you to be ashamed of breastfeeding. And that's just a handful of examples. So I'm gonna conclude with that because I think that that's probably the strongest point after telling you that wonderful porn story. And I'm happy, more than happy, to take any questions that you might have. Thank you.
Okay, it's up to you now. Do you have any questions? Yes.
Hey, I would like to know where and when did you take that screenshot of actions you can do if you flag a post? I guess you took it using your own Facebook
this
in
one?
The US, right? Yeah, this one.
So I live in Germany, so I took it in Germany on a German network.
Really?
Oh. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So it's the same. I will say this is the same everywhere. But this one, I can say it is a little bit old. It's from, when was the last Netzpolitik thing? Last November. So this is, like, I used this screenshot in a talk that I gave last November, I think. No, actually, it has to be more recent than that because of the breast. Yeah, sometime between November and now.
Okay, but maybe did you like, launch or did you create your Facebook profile in the US or something like that? Because I used this once, like, I don't know, 2 months ago, because a friend, you know, used an app which posted on her behalf, and in fact, it was not intentional. So I flagged this as spam. And when I used the flagging feature, it showed me different possibilities, actually just three.
So what I
that's
can
interesting.
Say...
That's really interesting.
Yeah,
so this
I
means
mean,
they show different possibilities or different options to different people.
Not usually. So I would be curious to see the example, but typically the difference would not be because it's me or you. The difference is because of the way that it's posted, whether it's on a private page, a public page, something like that. So like there's a different reporting cue for images versus text content, for links versus other things. So, I mean, it is possible and I would love to see, but usually when I find discrepancies like that, it's because it's different types of content or posted in different kinds of pages.
Really? Like you only go to this page after a first one that asks you why you want to block it. So there's spam, there's this content is awful, and there is I don't want to see this.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
Such things.
Yeah, this one comes up, I think, after you click, like, I don't think it should be on Facebook. So that's what theirs is for, like, I think this is against the rules. I don't think it should be on Facebook. And then it usually gives you these extra details.
But, maybe this is some interesting feedback for your online censorship project that you, I don't know, that you develop some sort of, maybe Facebook app, you know, which allows people to submit their view of Facebook to you, because I know that Facebook shows different versions of Facebook to different people and they roll out features asynchronously, and it would be really interesting how different Facebook is to different people. I mean, I'm always surprised when I see a Facebook of a friend, for instance, you know, they see different stuff. It's a fact.
No, that's a really cool idea. I'll run it by my team. I like it.
All right, yes.
I can't see past like right there. So
hello.
Hello.
You told that one of your friends reported your breast picture, but maybe it could be an algorithm which detects your picture. Do you think in the future algorithms became a greater role in online censorship?
Yes. So right now I can tell you that Facebook is using algorithms for some photos, but not for nude photos yet. So in this case, I know that it was one of my friends. I just don't know who. But you're right. Overall, what I've heard is that the companies are beginning to use algorithms specifically for two types of content that I've heard about. One is for extremist images. So images that are violent and extremist in nature. That's how they describe it. Of course, they mean terrorism. But so, you know, anything like they're trying to prevent, and Google's using this as well, they're trying to prevent things like beheading videos from becoming available to everyone very quickly. And that I'm sympathetic to, although I still think it has some problems. But I do think that, yeah, this is the way of the future. And what worries me is that the company, so right now the companies, if they're using algorithms to detect images, they're having the algorithms do the flagging, like you suggested, but then they still get moderated by humans. So it's okay in a way. There's that added protection of having a person looking at it. But what really scares me is the idea that eventually the companies might just go ahead and take down the content right away using an algorithm without ever letting a human look at it. And I think that that's when we're going to really see a lot more political censorship.
So you're saying that companies do behave in a certain way, and I mean, why do they behave? Do they behave like they behave? And what are the ideas? How could that be changed? And in what way?
I didn't understand. How could what be changed?
A big company behaves in a certain way. A big company behaves in a certain way, right?
Yeah.
So why is it? Why is it like it is? And how to change it? And where? Where to? I mean...
Yeah.
Right?
No, these are big questions.
I mean it's a collective psychology thing. It's just there. It's bigger than ourselves. So what's right and what's wrong? I mean, okay, showing breasts. I like breasts, but I can live without seeing them in Facebook. You know what I mean? It's just fine with me. I don't even have Facebook.
So from my perspective,
I know it's a big question, right?
Okay, so from my perspective, I mean, I'm actually personally of two minds. I'm always of the mind of like, burn it all down. And then on the other side, I think that there are small things that we can get these companies to do to change. And that starts with fucking changing their hiring patterns immediately. It's a real problem. The lack of diversity in these companies, and in almost all companies in Silicon Valley, the lack of funding that goes to women and people of color and et cetera, is disgusting. So that's the first thing. These companies have to change who they're made up of. After that, I mean, obviously that's not the only step. After that just brings in a diversity of ideas and a diversity of experiences. But I think after that, I would like, my personal opinion is that I would like these companies to only censor when required to do so by law. I think that Facebook at this point is big enough. I think that it's, you know, in some ways a utility. And I understand a lot of people aren't on it, but a lot of people don't have landlines either, and we still consider that a utility. And so I think that that's the other step. But I mean, on the other side of this, you know, I would like to see us pull away from these corporate networks entirely. I'm also realistic about how feasible that is right now. And so, you know, I kind of live on the edge of two worlds. I, you know, in the hacker community and that sort of scene, there's, you know, a lot of push for decentralization. And I completely support the idea in theory, but in practice, my friends from other countries and from different places all over the world that I've traveled and been, they're all absolutely centralized on Facebook. And if I leave, I leave them. And so it's a real problem. But I'm sort of, with this project and with my work in general, I'm always kind of balancing the line between mitigating those issues within the companies and just like pissing all over the companies. Thank you.
Hi there. You touched on this a couple of questions ago, but I was wondering whether you could speak a little bit to Twitter's recent decision to censor a lot of the content coming out of the so-called digital intifada, namely a lot of the pretty egregious content. Is this working? Yeah, maybe.
It is, yeah,
okay, so a lot of the pretty nasty content. For example, the most effective way to slit somebody's throat, which was published after a lot of these attacks going on in Israel at the moment. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah. So I didn't hear the...
So the original question was, I was wondering if you could talk a little bit to that. My understanding is that Twitter recently agreed that they would take down a lot of this content. And I was wondering what your, or perhaps the EFF's opinion is on these companies removing that type of content. Your opinion about that particular type of censorship is?
Sure. So in case folks aren't familiar, there's, and I'm going to broaden this a little bit, but because I think that there are some parallels here to several other countries. So Twitter and Facebook in particular have struck deals with a number of different countries on several occasions. Among them, and these three examples are the three most interesting to me, among them Germany, Turkey, and Israel. In the case of Turkey, a lot of the content is really should not be coming down. A lot of it is stuff like insulting Ataturk and things that are very specific to Turkish law and things that I think most of us would find pretty ridiculous. In Germany, a lot of it is hate speech and things that are illegal under German law. And then in Israel, the problem that I have with this is not that it's happening, because it's happening in a number of places. The problem that I have with this specific one is the way that they've defined it and the fact that it has resulted in a number of nonviolent pieces of content coming down. And so I think that, again, it's the same problem. It's not, let's say, specific to this country or this example, but it's the same problem that we see everywhere else, where the people who are making the decisions about what content should or should not come down don't do a good job. And so this, I'm not actually familiar with the specific content that prompted this. I know that there's a lot of nasty stuff that happens online there. I also know from my work, and my co-founder of this project is Palestinian, and the reason we started the project was because of a song that was heavily censored across Facebook like 6 years ago about Palestine that should never have been censored in the first place. It was not, you know, it was not violent content. And so I think that in sensitive cases like that, and I think Turkey's part of this as well, the problem that you have is where the line is drawn. And in this case specifically, I don't feel that they've been transparent about where that line has been drawn. If they're going to be transparent about it and, you know, describe what exactly constitutes whatever hate speech that they want to take down, I'm at a point where I feel, okay, like they're going to do that. Okay, how do I feel broadly, globally about companies censoring hate speech? I still don't feel like it's companies' jobs. I still feel that the law should determine what is acceptable or unacceptable because we vote for that. It's a, you know, we do live, well, I'm not going to say everybody, I don't know where you're all from, but theoretically, I would like to live in a democracy and I'd like to live in a place where what I can and cannot say is determined by the people, not determined by a bunch of men in a company. And so that is what I kind of, that is the problem that I have with this in that particular case. And the fact that in this case, I do see a lot of nonviolent or innocuous content getting swept up.
All right, there's another question here.
Yeah.
Just a very short one. You thought that you said that the censorship is being outsourced to the Philippines. And I wanted to know if they're just outsourcing image censorship, or if they are teaching them languages, and if so, how they should detect irony and everything. And also, if not, are there, for example, teams censoring in Germany? And wouldn't it then be very easy to apply German law and not Facebook rules for this censorship if there's a team working just for one country?
Mm. So no, so the outsourcing to the Philippines is simply the only well-documented outsourcing that we have. So Facebook specifically outsources its image content moderation to companies in the Philippines. There's a guy called Moritz Rezevic who does really interesting work on this and who's done filming in the Philippines showing where how people feel about the censorship, why the Philippines, why specifically that. But no, more broadly, Facebook, I think, has six different teams across six different time zones that look at different types of content. They do have specific language teams, though not for every language. So there are teams who, you know, deal specifically with, let's say, Arabic or with German or with whatever. But from what I've heard, like the Burmese language is really a problem because there's a lot of violent hate speech that comes through in Myanmar, Burma, and they don't have the experts to deal with it. So it depends on the country.
Anyway, all right, then the last time. Question is here.
I might not have understood you completely, but I don't see how or why anybody could force Facebook to do anything. So because that's what I understand from you, that you demand that we or somebody should speak up or so to get Facebook to do something.
So they have.
How can anybody do that?
Yeah.
Plus,
well,
the second one, you've just said that you would like to live in a democracy with certain liberties and not in a world where decisions are taken by company leaders. So why are you using Facebook? How can you demand that from Facebook? Facebook is not a public space. Facebook is no democracy. When you use Facebook, you agree that company leaders decide about that space you're using. So I don't quite get your point, I think.
So Facebook has more than 1 billion users. It has more users than any country has people. It has more users than any other grouping of humans, except for the two top religions in the world. So to me, I realize, yes, it's a corporate space. Of course it's a corporate space. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't make it better. And so who should be? I mean, I don't know. All of us, me, that is up to those who care about it to do it. But I can tell you, I've worked with and against these companies for years in trying to push them to do things. They have made small changes when we push them hard. Why do I think these changes are important? Well, yeah, because not all of us have the privilege to say, fuck off Facebook. Some of the people I know use it like because they can't, if you tap out of it in certain countries, then you're tapping out of an entire network for organizing things like protests, for organizing demonstrations, whatever. And so it's really difficult in some places to tap out of Facebook and to just say, this doesn't matter. I have the privilege to walk away. I'm guessing most of us do, and that's great. And I wish that enough of us would, but that's not happening. And so for me, the point is realistically that something that has more than a billion people should be treating people better. And so I am going to continue to fight for it, even if it seems completely hopeless. Thank you.
Can he say something more?
Okay, what I understand from you is you want to try to convince a big part of those, I don't know, 1 billion people who are Facebook users to do something so that Facebook then changes its policy.
No, I want to convince Facebook to change the policy for those 1 billion users. But
you can only do that if you have a huge number of Facebook users demanding that, right?
Not necessarily. So we got the real names policy implementation changed last year when we had about 30 popular, well-known people protesting it. It's not always that hard. You don't always have to have 1 million people. Sometimes you can make change by having 30 drag queens who are really, really angry protest outside of Facebook's headquarters. It works.
Julian, thank you very much. Thank you.